0818 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon. You are very welcome to Liveline. Katie Hannan with you until three today. Now, Columbine, Sandy Hook, Parkland, and now Robb Elementary School in Uvalde in Texas. It's a terrible, terrible day. Just watching CNN there before we came down to studio, they are showing the pictures now of the first children that have been identified as victims of that school shooting yesterday. 8-year-old Yuzia Garcia, his cousin Xavier Javier Lopez, and we also know Amery Joe Garcia, age 10. It's beyond heartbreaking to look into these little children's faces and think about what happened yesterday. I want to go over now to another school in Texas where school children are arriving for their school day today. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
John, you're a teacher there?
I'm a retired principal. I'm still working in the district for the campus. I go from district to district, like substituting. Right now I'm substituting as an assistant principal. I've been with the district since 1987.
So where are you exactly, John?
I'm in the inner city of San Antonio, Texas, and my my population is all Hispanic. It's 99% Hispanic Latino.
Which is very similar. We know it's about 80% Hispanic Latino in this community that was hit.
Yeah, these are my kids. I teach, I work in a school from pre-K, 3-year-olds, all the way up to middle school, which is like 12 and 13-year-olds. Every day I walk the classrooms, I go into second grade, third grade, fourth grade classrooms.
Yeah.
And even after all this time, you know, I've been here since 1987 and been with this district since 91. This is just... You know, I didn't know about it yesterday because I was in school and I couldn't, like I was told, your researcher, my brothers and sisters were all texting me and calling me and I couldn't answer the phone because it's blocked by the district firewall. And I thought something had happened to somebody at home in Ireland, you know, or in England. And then driving home at, 6 o'clock yesterday evening and just watching the news all night and not knowing the kids. And then you saying the kids' names this morning, you know. These are my kids. Those are the names that I've been working with for the last 30 odd years here.
And I'm just so conscious, John, of all the parents who would have to get their kids out of bed and dressed and hand them their school bags and bring them to school today, John.
Yeah, and that's, right now I'm sitting in my car in the parking lot because, you know, there's for silence and for focus and watching, you know, parents drive up and actually getting out of the car and walking their kids in today. And we have a police officer on campus here at the gate right now, and all the administrators are out. I mean, I'm out every morning doing duty here, but this is the first time I've seen a police officer come all year. Well, I've only been here since February, you know. Like I said, I substitute in different schools and different areas of the district throughout the year, you know. They're fantastic people. I mean, I love San Antonio. I love the community. I love the Latino community. Yo hablo español ahora. I speak Spanish now. And they're very like the Irish because, you know, they have the Catholic faith and they have the large families and they have the whole, you know, I remember when I was growing up with 9 brothers and sisters, these are the community, these are the people that I am working with. And, you know, they touch my heart so much, you know.
You're originally from Galway, John.
Yeah, I'm from Damore County, Galway. I worked in Tuam for 6 years in the presentation as a high school music teacher. Then I moved over to San Antonio in 1987 for opportunity to become an administrator, which I did. You know, I became a principal, I became an assistant principal, a principal in the district. There's no retirement age here in San Antonio, so I didn't have to retire when I was 65 or 66, you know, which I am 66 right now. But I continue to work. I'm hoping to move back to Ireland full-time next year. Because I haven't been home since COVID, and so, you know, I'm coming home this summer for 6 weeks to scout and to look and see, you know, for places. But professionally, San Antonio has been fantastic to me, you know, and the culture is beautiful, you know. Yeah.
But how has, I mean, I named the other schools that we all know about, all the other places we know about, you know, for all the wrong reasons. Like, how much have those shootings, those school shootings, impacted on the schools that you have worked in over the last 20 years?
Yeah, well, you know, the whole security systems in the schools, and most of the campuses here in my district were under bond back about 15 years ago, right after the shooting started. So all the lobbies, all the office areas, the entrances are like double entrance now, and you have to have a code. You can't just walk in. You have to buzz in. You have to show identification. So, and we do lockdown procedures every year. You know, we do firearms, of course, every month. We do lockdown.
Yeah, describe to me what a lockdown drill would be.
A lockdown is where the administrator, like for me, is the principal. We'll get on the loudspeaker or whatever, the intercom system, and I would say, you know, lockdown, 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 and then all the teachers would close their doors, lock their doors, turn off the lights, and secure their kids in an area away from the door. And they cover the window if there's a window in the door. They go into the bathroom if there's a bathroom there. They keep quiet, and then the police, the district police, would come and they do a drill. They run through the campus and they'd knock on doors and they test the security of the teachers. If teachers would answer the door when they were knocked on, or they would just leave them locked, you know. And this takes about maybe 45 minutes. So the kids would be locked down in darkness, silence for 45 to an hour, depending on, you know, the campus, depending on the size of the campus. Last year, I remember I was at a high school and we did that for, it was an hour and a half, and actually one teacher and their kids were forgotten about. So it's a matter of, this happens every year. We do this every year. The teachers go through training at the beginning of the year, and then afterwards they give us a report. You know, the police officers give us a report on how well we did, give the administrators a report. So then we talk to the staff about that, and we say, okay, this wasn't right, or are you open the door for this? But this knocking, you shouldn't have opened it, or, you know, you should have put the child in from the restroom, because, you know, anybody that's in the hallway needs to go into the nearest classroom if the lockdown drill comes on. So now it's common practice kind of thing, you
but
know.
Common practice, obviously, we know that and we hear about it so much, but it still must be, it must be a scary thing for a child to understand why they're doing those lockdowns.
I know, but, you know, when it becomes common practice, you become anaesthetised to it, you know. There's just so much... There's so much that has gone on that people have become accustomed to, you know? And it's so sad that we can't, you know, that we don't remain shocked. Do you know what I'm saying? And it's continuous in Sandy Hook. That was the last elementary school. I remember Dunblane, was it Dunblane in Scotland?
In Scotland, yeah.
And I'm sure the Scottish and then the Swedish and the other countries in Europe have done a whole lot more about security and about not allowing guns than we have. And especially in Texas. I mean, you know, I'm in the state of Texas, and it's free carry. Anybody can carry a gun, but you can't bring them into the school. But they do want to arm the teachers now in San Antonio and in Texas, you know, the teachers should have firearms to arm themselves in case this happens again. But then if you have an unstable teacher or an unstable assistant or somebody, employee, you know, what's that going to do, you know? Or if a child gets hold of a gun of a teacher, you know, it's like crazy. There's no... Stop. Let's stop this now. You know, there's none of that. I remember Steve Kerr was on the TV last night. He's the coach of one of the big basketball teams here in the final. And he was said, we have to stop this. That's what Biden said last night. We have to stop this, but we won't, because of the lockjaw and the government between the Republicans and the Democrats, you know.
And would that be in the back of your mind, or would it have been in the back of your mind going into school, in, you know, going into your do your day's work, that this is something that possibly might happen, that this might be something you yourself might have to deal with?
Well, I have to deal with it every day because I'm not in the classroom and I'm working in the hallways, and so anybody that's there and doesn't have a badge, you know, needs to be, I have to always, you know, check if that happens. And again, going to different campuses that I haven't been responsible for fully throughout the year and putting my procedures in place has been difficult, because sometimes the front office is not as strict as it should be, you know what I'm saying? Yeah, I mean, anything can happen. I mean, I remember yesterday afternoon after this had happened and I was doing duty after school here, before I heard about this, actually, it was that there was a parent sitting outside, you know, on the phone arguing with their husband, and there were the custody fight, and she was loud and loud. She went on for about 30 minutes. So I've had issues. I mean, I've had parents arrested on my campus, you know, for custody issues. So those things, and, you know, custody issues can become very violent. And I've had to call the police a number of times for backup, and... I haven't feared for my own safety, you know, because I don't know. I haven't feared for my own safety. I mean, my job is to protect the kids, not to protect myself. I mean, not that they're a march or anything, but, you know, I don't think about my own safety in the whole scheme of things, really, on my campus, on my school, you know.
Yeah.
I think about how do I keep my kids safe, even when the teachers are not in the classroom or the walkout and leave the kids unattended if they go to the restroom without permission or whatever, you know, if the teachers go. I said, well, who's watching the kids? You know, who's watching the kids? who's watching the kids.
I think, John, here, yeah, when people hear, you know, this story in particular, that the person who carried out this horrific shooting was 18 years of age, that he was allowed to walk into a store and buy two assault rifles for his birthday. I think people here just cannot get their head around how this is allowed to happen. Have you been engaged? Like, when you talk to people and you say it's Texas, it's got that frontier mentality, politicians that are pro-gun are very big there. So would you find yourself in conversations with people, you know, arguing, toss on this?
Not since Trump became president, you can't have conversations. I mean, let me say this. I because I've been so much involved with the Latino community and in the inner city, all my friends are Latino, you know. I don't have any white friends. Can I say that? I don't have any Republican friends. You know, I mean, I remember going up to another state to visit one of my brothers, and I remember having a conversation with some of those people up there about their farmers in the Midwest, you know, about, they were talking about, you know, illegal aliens and all that stuff coming in, and they were very disrespectful towards the Latino community. I mean, I came to America in the 70s as a student illegally, you know, and I worked in Boston, so I was just as illegal as the ones coming across the border. But the whole idea of race and the whole idea of, you know, we're better than them and they shouldn't be allowed to do this, you know, and I think that whole mentality, even though the shooter's name is a Latino name, the whole mentality is, you know, that it's white privilege is white privilege, you know. And I think that permeates, especially down here in the South, especially in Texas, you know, that this is our land and we're cowboys and we can do what we want and, you know. No. I mean, I don't agree with that at all. I would never own a gun, let me say. I mean, my house was burgled a couple of years ago, you know. It felt very bad to be burgled, but I got security systems, but I didn't get a gun, you know. I would never think of getting a gun to protect myself, you know.
And yet you know a lot of your neighbours will have a gun.
Oh, yeah, I do, yeah. I mean, but you can't live your life in fear, you know. You go and you do your job. I mean, on the day that the shooting in the supermarket up in Buffalo, was in the store in my own neighborhood, you know, shopping, doing my weekly shopping, and I was like, okay, that could have been me, you know. But you know, it could have been my store. But then again, you look at where it took place. It took place in a mainly black shopping area, and of course, you know, my shopping areas is definitely, you know, 90% white, or, you know, 50% white and Latino, you know. So.
And John, you're there today. You're watching the parents drop their kids at school.
Yeah.
Would you be talking to those kids today? Would you have anything to say to them? What can you say to them?
Maybe the middle school kids, the ones that are, you know, 6th, 7th and 8th grade, like junior highs, those kind of kids, you know, the 1st, 2nd and 3rd graders, they are in Ireland. If they ask me, yes, the younger ones, no. I visit the classrooms like I normally do. I do my rounds, you know. I always go into the classrooms and say good morning to all the kids, every classroom, every morning, you know. Mm-hmm. And then the hallways for the middle school, this is before school open, starts at 8 o'clock, you know, about 1 minute's time. You know, if they want to ask me something, I'll talk to them about it, you know, but I won't bring it up, no.
John, best of luck in your school day today and every day, because I think it's just...
Yeah, six days left.
Of this school year. I mean, that is so heartbreaking to hear that those kids, some of those kids were on the, you know, wear something fun day because
tomorrow.
They're done. Yeah, exactly. They were on their way, almost finished school. Mm-hmm. And one of those little children who died had just hours after he had been on the honour roll, as they say there. It's just beyond heartbreaking. You wouldn't be able to look at those pictures, actually.
I know. I haven't seen them now myself because I came straight to work for it about 6:30 this morning. So I look at them when I get home this afternoon.
Okay, John. Okay. Many thanks for that, and best of luck.
Okay, and thanks for calling. Thank you. I'll listen to the show live later on when I get the podcast. Okay.
Thanks, John. Thank you.
Thank you,
bye. Michael. Michael, good afternoon.
Bye-bye. Good afternoon.
Yeah, Michael. I can hear already. You're American.
Yes, ma'am. I'm from Chicago.
Right, but you're living here now in Ireland?
For the last 12 years.
And, You know this community, do you?
I worked in the entertainment business for years and traveled the country in a tour bus. And I'm personally familiar with Uvalde because I-90, which takes you out of the West Coast, New Mexico, takes you right through that community going to West Texas. If you're heading to San Antonio to the south, to the east, or you're heading to Corpus Christi to the south. You know, and everyone always jokes we're in Matthew McConaughey's hometown, you know, when going through there. And West Texas has so many similarities to Ireland. You know, it's rural. It's filled with small communities where everybody knows each other. It's very religious. The people are friendly and kind and helpful. You know, the biggest difference is it's a lot of brown down there and not green, you know. Me personally, next to the Chicago area where I'm from, I would say that most of my friends live in Texas, you know, whether it be Austin, Corpus Christi, San Antonio, all over there. You know, it's extremely personal to me because they have children and grandchildren, you know. Yeah. I mean, Uvalde is really about the size of Mallow in, you know, Central Ireland. I live in Donegal. Okay.
And when you see what's happening there today, Michael?
I was up till 3:30 in the morning watching. I'm speechless, you know, seeing one of the mothers from Sandy Hook on putting a picture of her child, which is the same age as these little children killed. These were little tiny children where someone came in with a gun and just started spraying everyone from the time he came through the door. They didn't have a chance, you know. If I just say for a second, your teacher really hit a nerve with me because it made me remember. I'm 60, but I remember, you know, where I grew up right outside of Chicago was still the end of what they call Tornado Alley. You see all the tornadoes in the States, right?
Yeah.
So when we were that age, the same age of these children, we used to have to practice monthly tornado drills, you know, where they blow the siren and have to push all the desks to the corner and secure them together. And like even today, you know, just seeing the tornadoes, I still feel it. And I'm 60 years old. I can't get over how children today, all children, high school children, these children have to do shooter drills. What are they going to be like for the rest of their lives? You know, it never goes away. I'm telling personal experience. That's a tornado. That your part of your school routine is preparing for someone to come in and kill you. You know, part of your teacher training is part of that, and that's the culture I come from.
Yeah, it's so normalized. I think that's
yeah, it
that's
is normalized, and the fact that it's normalized and it's okay is so angering to me. You know, and that it's not going to change, and no one's doing anything to change it. You know,
and Michael, you've had your own brushes with gun culture when you lived in the U.S.
In Chicago, I lived in an area called Logan Square, which was a historic neighborhood. I mean, it was a great place to live, but because Chicago's full of neighborhoods, as they say. And the next neighborhood over, the gang violence down, and there was my house, another house, and a small 4-unit apartment building, and some gang bangers came after a guy in there. He pulled his girlfriend in front, and their head was blown off. I was away, thank God, but when my wife, Christiana, came home, there was still blood all over the sidewalk, you know, and everything else there. And that's not the only time I was followed home from. I worked at an entertainment venue, and one day, that's all it takes in the States that you're not paying attention. My routine was to back in the garage, let the garage down, hit the security system, then get out. The one time I got out of my car without doing that, there were two guys in with guns at my head right there in the garage. Tell me, thank God I didn't, someone else paid the deposit, but, you know, I got robbed and severely beaten with two guns, and they kept telling me to get down on my knees, and I have friends in law enforcement, and they said, don't do it. It dehumanizes you, and I think I'm alive today because I took the beating and wouldn't get down on my knees, and they ran away because They would have shot me.
So that is actual advice you got from friends who are...
law enforcement friends, not to get on your knees because it dehumanizes you to them in their minds. These are friends that are in law enforcement, and I to this day, I thank them that I'm alive because of that advice, because I honestly believe they would have, because they had no masks on. When I gave composites looked right, like them, not that they ever caught anyone, you know, but I went out and bought a gun right after that.
You went out and bought a gun for yourself?
Mm-hmm. Yeah. At the time, you know, and this was years ago, it was $20. Yeah, you fill out a piece of paperwork, you know, you get in the post office, you mail it in with $20, and they send you a license. You walk in the store and you buy a gun. That's how easy it is.
But you know? Were you able to use that gun? I mean, would you have been able if you had to?
I took a safety course. I went to a regular firearms training. You know, like I said, I have friends in law enforcement. And I kept it in a lockbox secured in the house. It was a last precaution, you know. We had a two flat night. My wife and I, were getting rid of a tenant, and police said, "Don't do it," you know, because he was Iraqi veteran with PTSD, and they came in and he had a gun pointing. So it happened right in my own house too, three times. I had forgotten about that one. Thank God, you know. But in Texas, for example, they changed the laws. It used to be $140. Plus a background check, plus fingerprints, plus a training course of 4 to 6 hours just to get a gun license, right? Now, $40, no more background check, and you can carry it around. I'm telling you, you go in Texas like your gentleman's talking about going into the store, you'll see people walking in with sidearms, left, right, and center. It's the culture. It's not like any place you can imagine on this planet. You know, thank God for places like Ireland and the UK where they don't have that crap.
But you were part of it, though, because you also bought into it. You bought into it and you had your own gun.
I bought into it because I was married at the time. You know what I'm saying? It wasn't about me protecting myself anymore. It was about me protecting someone else that has nothing to do with this, you know. And those people knew where I lived and they were never caught.
Right. But did you feel safer having that gun?
In retrospect, no. You know, at the time, in my mind, yeah. Because I knew how to use it, you know, properly. Would I use it? No idea. You know, but you never know what you're going to happen when push comes to shove. You know, that's the honest answer. You know, but it was that easy to get one, you know.
Earlier today, Michael, I was quoting a line that has been doing the rounds on social media here that, you know, in retrospect, that Sandy Hook was basically the end of the gun culture debate in the gun control debate, I should say, in the US, because once America decided killing children was something that was bearable, that the debate was over. Would you agree with that?
I strongly disagree with it. There's over 100 million more guns on the street since Sandy Hook.
Oh, no, but that's the point that was being made, that there was no more debate about it at that point.
Oh, no, no,
that
no.
Gun
no,
control listen, was accepted then, was gone off the agenda then.
Basketball star Damian Lee said today a quote that I can't get out of my mind. It's easier in the U.S. to get a gun right now than it is baby formula. You know, yeah, isn't it disturbing?
Of course, yeah, because we know that there's that huge issue around accessing baby formula.
But it's easier to get a gun. In the big picture of things, I worked for the Democratic Party in Chicago for years. I was involved with the Obama administration early on and the first election campaign with Joe, President Biden. And listen, the National NRA Convention, National Rifle Association, who is the core behind all of these guns, is funded by the people that make and sell the guns, right? Their convention is in Houston, which is directly across the street, the state, on the other side from Uvalde. The keynote speakers are Texas Governor Greg Abbott and Senator Ted Cruz, along with the joke we call Trump. You know, the same people the same damn people that are representing these poor, innocent parents and children that were slaughtered yesterday, they're government representatives who are supposed to do something and stand up now and make things better for them, are turning around and representing the other side that provided the guns to an 18-year-old kid and signed the law not a year ago, June last year, to make it easier for him to buy guns when he turned 18.
Yeah.
You know? The money that goes out to their legalized lobbies and their secret political action committees to politicians to vote their way would pay off the Irish debt 10 times over.
Yeah, and I know that Ted Cruz, your senator there, is one of the biggest beneficiaries of
their money.
From that end.
There's an election coming up in Texas. The other Republican candidate against Greg Abbott withdrew from speaking and called out Greg Abbott if he had any sort of heart, any sort of conscience to do the same. And he hasn't opened his mouth.
Yeah. Michael, I have to take a break. Many, many thanks for that.
Yeah.
We'll go to a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
Okay, I want to go to Bill now. Bill, good afternoon to you.
Good afternoon, Katie. How's it going?
I'm good. You're also over there in Chicago.
I am. I've been here for about 32 years. So, lots of talk, lots of tears, lots of upset people, but the reality of it is half the country, or more than half the country, don't want to change the gun laws. Many of the states are making it easier to get weapons. We had a fella leave Illinois, go to Wisconsin, shoot a couple of people with a military-style rifle. He didn't suffer any consequences for that. So it's a shameful time for us. But in 2 or 3 weeks, it'll be back to everything as normal, I'm afraid to say.
But Bill, I heard other data being quoted saying that actually people are open to at least, you know, making it more difficult to access weaponry and to have, you know, better background checks required. But that the legislation isn't being pushed forward by the Senate, by senators.
It's you know, we can blame the politicians, but the reality of it is, and I see it every day, there's a fear here now, so people want more access to guns rather than less. In fact, my place of work, I've had some conversations and people are talking today about getting weapons to protect themselves. So honestly, I don't think that there'll be lots of talk for the next few weeks. And then people will get back to business and will wait for the next horrific and horrible incident.
Because I saw another commentator suggesting that, you know, we saw the Parkland kids, you know, they campaigned so bravely and, you know, really put it up to politicians. And we have obviously the Sandy Hook parents have been campaigning all these years. That there's so many young people now who really are calling for change that maybe, just maybe, there may be a chance of a turn.
I don't see it. I don't feel it. We're in a country where people are more afraid now. Chicago, you know, has got a bad rap. Some parts of Chicago are extremely dangerous. Because of the availability of weapons, I'm not hopeful for change. I would love to see it. I think our president will push for some changes, but they'll be minute and they'll be based on different states' politics. So in Chicago, we would have a pretty strict gun control laws, but they can drive an hour to Indiana and buy guns without any restrictions.
Bill, will you stay there? Because I've got John on another line. And I believe, John, you carry a gun, do you?
Oh, no. I do not carry a gun. I own a gun. But as I mentioned to your screener, I live in the east and in a rural part of the country. And so when I am out in the mountains fishing and hiking. I do carry a weapon with me for protection from the odd encounter with a black bear and its cub. But to say that I carry a gun, no, I do not carry a gun. But I do own a gun, yes.
And where do you stand on that, you know, right to bear arms, that constitutional right that all Americans have?
Fundamentally, I support it. As I mentioned to your presenter, my wife and I visited Ireland for the first time just over a month ago, and it was the trip of a lifetime. And the difference in a worldview and where we and as a society and our places in society are very different in Ireland. And just my, if you'll forgive me for in my just 2 weeks of experience, than what it is here in the United States. It's part of it's been with us for 246 years, I guess. You know, and it's I don't know how to explain it. Fundamentally, I do support it because of its fundamental, the basis of it, and that each individual has the right to protect him or herself. But no, I don't carry a gun to the movie theater. I don't carry a gun to the grocery or anywhere else. I think there's a difference. There's room in between that to support the right to own a weapon, but do I feel a need to carry it when I go to the grocery? No, I don't do that.
But then when it comes to gun control, like you heard Bill there just before you came on the line, saying he doesn't think this is going to have any impact on, political moves around gun control. Would you be open to more gun control?
I'd be open to the conversation, but I don't know what that means. I don't know what more gun control means.
Well, making it more difficult to access arms. To buy guns.
It could mean that you don't have a right to go and buy an automatic weapon. It could mean that you do a full background check. It could mean that if local police enforcement family members think you have psychological problems, then your right to bear that arm is forfeit at least for a time.
Yeah, now you're getting to the root causes, in my estimation. And I'm sorry, I've missed your name.
Sir. That's Bill. That's Bill. Bill, John.
Yes, Bill. Bill, you're getting to, for me, the root causes. But you're also getting to a point where to the part of the discussion that I would pull off and say, this is not realistic. I do not want to see another school shooting, mass shooting in a movie theater. This has to stop. But it's not going to stop through legislation. It just won't.
How do you know? But John, what? I mean, honestly, listening to what Bill just said there, they seem the most reasonable, logical, straightforward.
Sense.
Yes. So why not support
that
at least?
Well, again, I am more than open to that discussion, but I think that last part of when I purchased and I own one handgun to carry with me when I go to the mountains, I went through a background check. I submitted my name and information for a background check. So I'm all for that. If you're a convicted felon, you don't need to own a gun. And especially if you are convicted of a violent crime, you do not need to own a gun. And I don't profess to know all the laws in the United States or from state to state. That may be the case, and I believe it is, in some states, if not all. But now we get down to we need a system where a family member says, you don't need a gun. You just don't need to carry a gun. You don't need to own a gun. How do we get to that? That's not legislation. That's my point, is that that's not going to be solved by legislation.
But what about the legislation?
What I told your screener was there is no one cause and there is no one solution. And that one cause is not that there, that are there automatic weapons? I don't have the first bit of interest in owning an automatic weapon. None. I have no use for that.
Is there any reason why anybody can I can I just ask you this one, because I think this is something that many people will wonder. That 18-year-old who shot those children yesterday, on his 18th birthday, was able to buy two assault rifles, walk into a shop and purchase two assault rifles. Is there any reason in God's earth that anybody should ever have a use for an assault weapon? Like, that should anybody should be allowed to buy one of those off the shelf?
Yeah, see, there, and you just asked a compound question. Is there any reason for someone to own one? My answer to that would be no. Should anyone be allowed to? Now you're into a conversation I'm happy to have. But
well, let's have it, John. Should anybody be allowed to?
Sure. I'm not prepared to come off with an answer that you're looking for today. I don't know that. I need to wrap my head around that, to be honest with you. Do people need them? Absolutely not.
So if nobody needs them, why should you be allowed to, when they can do such absolute devastation, when we know what can happen and unfortunately happens over and over again? Why are people allowed to buy something they don't need?
I would tend to agree with you. That it's not a matter of being allowed. They should not be available. They should just not be available for manufacture. Because there is no need for them. No, unless that's a military weapon. But no, I don't see any need for it. And so ergo, no, there probably isn't. They shouldn't be manufactured for individual purchase. But when you start saying allowed in the United States of America, now you're getting into something that's a word that Katie causes the reaction to even some reasonable people to say, hang on, now you're starting down a path that I'm not comfortable with, because what's the next step?
Because
now,
you don't like being
paranoia in that.
But you don't like being told. But John, is that just about not being not liking being told what to do? No, like that notion
that's the
United States. That's why we applaud, right? We're talking about freedoms here, personal freedoms. You know, you have to look at the freedoms of the kids going to school safely, and now their freedoms are being restricted every day. Got to go through screening. Parents can't go and see their kids without going through double doors. Kids can't go to school without going through metal detectors. What about those honest to God freedoms feel safe that are seriously taken away by the fact that we allow people to buy guns and we allow the sale of these guns?
Billy, you don't have to tell me that. Please understand that you don't. Please don't tell me that, because we have a grandchild. Nobody wants that. Nobody wants that. And everyone recognizes. And as my wife and I talked about that last night, we went to school, and you just went to school, and you walked home. And that was it. So no one, Bill, is suggesting that we're forgetting those children and their freedom to live safely. But I guess what I'm saying, Katie, is that if you want change, you have to be very careful about the language that you use and how you present that. Because when you, again, this country is based on the pursuit of freedom, or the enjoyment of freedom.
Oh, John, John, I'm sorry. I hear what you're saying, but there are dead children today. There are dead,
Katie,
beautiful,
do
small
that.
Children.
Please don't tell me that I don't understand that.
But we are talking about balancing. We're talking about balancing rights, John.
Yeah, absolutely. But if you want change, you have to convince some people that I don't agree with. You have to convince them that you can't. There's no reason to have one of those weapons. So my point, I guess, what I'm trying to explain to you is that more of a perspective on how to have a conversation that gets us all where we want to be, and that's where kids can go to school safely. And where they can where teachers can teach, and they don't have to worry about shelters in place or how to protect themselves. I'm just giving you one American's perspective on how to start the conversation in a way that doesn't automatically light up the red lights for people who aren't where you and I are. I don't want that again. Nobody wants that. And I'm not. Please don't suggest that I don't understand. There needs to be a balance. That's, and I think most people, Katie, get that. But when, if you want to have a conversation, you can't start off with words that suggest I'm taking your freedom away. And that's a hard thing to balance.
Okay.
It is. It's almost impossible to balance. But the last thing I'll tell you is that, and Bill, I don't know if you feel this way in Chicago, I think you are, but we just live in a constant state of agitation and conflict in this country. And even young people, that 18-year-old in Texas, I have no idea. The three of us have no idea what he was thinking. Why would he feel that way? What was so conflicted in his mind or angry or whatever it might be? But that's life here, I'm sorry to say. And so
okay,
much
and
of
I,
it is
I
about
think,
politics.
I know. But John, I think that's the point everyone... A lot of people, at least, are making is that in those circumstances, when you can't know what's going on in young men's heads, they should not be circumstances where they can walk into
that's
a shop
a
and buy
issue,
assault rifles.
That's
okay. Okay.
Not
John,
a
I'm going to.
Yeah.
Okay. Many thanks. I've got a lot of calls coming through. I really do appreciate that perspective. And we will take a break.
Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
I want to bring in Leslie now. Leslie, good afternoon.
Hi.
Oh, yeah, it's probably not afternoon there, though, is it? You're over in Seattle in Washington.
I'm near Seattle, yeah. It's not. It's the morning.
Good morning, Leslie. Good morning.
Leslie,
I see here you have grandchildren. Will they be in school today?
No, one's a newborn and one's 3.5. So, no, thankfully.
When you wake up or are going to bed last night, you will have seen this. What's going through your mind?
Well, it's just another one, right? It's becoming too common, and it has been for a while. And as a individual person, I feel powerless in the way it will go because I'm not the one making the decisions. And so you just go to bed hoping that it'll get better, but knowing it won't.
Yeah.
So.
And just listening to John, our caller there before the break, saying, you know, it's really important to frame this debate and not make people feel that you're going after their freedoms. It's just for, I think
I
it's very difficult
disagree.
From a European perspective, that just that's a difficult one to take on board.
No, I just believe wholeheartedly that, you know, when the right to bear arms was written in the Constitution in 1791, it may have been relevant then. It is absolutely not relevant now. And life is different, and the world's a lot different. So I think the Constitution needs an overhaul, my personal opinion, because guns are only made for one thing, and that is to kill or hurt, no matter if it be a human or an animal. And what on earth do we need to be doing that for? I mean, there are many countries in this world that don't have that written in their constitution and are doing just fine.
Yeah, and we know, of course, that this is something that's almost unique to the United States, these massive school shootings. Leslie, many thanks for that. I want to bring in John now. John, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you?
How are you, John? Where are you based there?
I live in Connecticut, and unfortunately, 10 years ago, we had the terrible situation in Sandy Hook, where children were killed. And
which we all thought, John, was surely that is going to change things, that surely will be the line that you can't cross. But it didn't.
No, it will not change here for a long, long time. These guns are too easily accessible. And it's, you know, this like the situation yesterday. The gunman, he was killed by a police officer. Will they ever find the real reason behind this shooting? No. Last month it was upstate New York. 10 years ago it was in Connecticut. These situations are not going to stop anytime soon. There's too many guns on the streets. Too minor of penalties for getting caught with a gun. The underage kids here in America, I'm talking in Connecticut, I live outside of New Haven, Connecticut, and you could say there's at least 5 shootings a week on the streets. And it's just totally out of control. When we started saying defund the police departments, people don't realize how serious of a matter that is. Number one, people don't want to be police officers anymore. God forbid they, you know, we're all human. They have to react in a split second. If they ever make the wrong reaction, they're crucified for life. And that's not the way the American way is.
And
it's just so sad here.
And John, I mean, Sandy Hook and the community was so devastated by that shooting. That
little town, that small community will never be the same again. Those children that survived that awful situation, they will never be the same again. A couple weeks ago here, in another small town in Connecticut, a 16-year-old high school student stabbed another high school student from a different town, killed him. And why are these kids doing this stuff? Why? Where are they learning this stuff? Why is there so much hatred in our country all of a sudden? I mean, look at the Capitol building a couple years ago. That should never happen in the United States of America. It shouldn't happen anywhere. Look at the conflict in Russia and Ukraine. That should never happen. Never. But why? What's the answer? I can't tell you.
And you don't think that this is going to make a difference either?
No. We have a congressperson. His name is Chris Murphy. He has been fighting this in the Capitol for years and years and years. And if you have an opportunity, if you could hear his speech yesterday, it was amazing. But it's not going to make a difference tomorrow. And all we pray for that it doesn't happen again, but it's going to. And, you know, it's how do we stop it? No one can say. You know, they're talking about freedom this, freedom that. For you to go into a sporting arena here in the United States, you have to wait in line, go through a metal detector, this and that. You don't hear people complain about that. But if you do it in a school, they're saying you're going against the rights of the students. We're only trying to protect the students.
And do you think that what happened in Sandy Hook, do you think people in Sandy Hook carry weapons now? Or has there been a change in gun culture around that community?
I can't speak for that, but I know that there was a huge revolt against Remington. That was the gun manufacturer who made the gun that, you know, that person used. Again, I can't be, you know, quote me on that or whatever.
Well,
but
they took a lawsuit. Families took a lawsuit
but
against that company.
That situation brought that town so close. I mean, that's such a family little area, you know. You would never dream of something like that happening at Sandy Hook. And I'm sure it was the same way yesterday. I'm sure, you know, now I believe this gunman yesterday was a high school student in that town, but I could be wrong there. Now, was he angry at someone in that school? You know, all this stuff will come out, but we'll never know for sure because he's not around to tell us, you know?
Yeah, but I mean...
No, he killed his grandmother before he went to the school. He crashed his truck before he went to the school, you know? And it's just...
I think I read his grandmother actually was shot but survived that shooting, but...
I thought she was killed.
Yeah, and we understand that he went into a fourth grade classroom and all the victims were in the same room, which is the most horrific thought. Again, it's very hard to go there in your head. John, thank you so much for that. I want to bring in Tommy now. Tommy, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you?
I'm good. Are you calling from across the water, Tommy?
No, I'm not. I'm here in Dublin.
And your point on this?
My point is as simple as this. Americans love their guns more than they love their children. And until that changes, nothing is ever going to change over there.
Okay, I think we need to be careful, though. We do need to be a bit careful, though.
Apologies to any other contributor there from the state.
And there are many, many Americans...
Many
Americans totally disagree with...
Absolutely, and as several of your contributors pointed out. But what I mean is the state of America, let's call it. And that's just a sad fact. Cross into Canada and murder rates and death rates by gun killings just drops 10-20 fold. And it seems to me that America suffers from some obsession with guns. It's like to a man with a hammer, everything is a nail, you know. And they're digging their own grave, literally.
Yeah, but you cannot have that conversation in America, it seems, and you can't go against the NRA your political future is in jeopardy.
It's gone. They acknowledge speed limits. You'll get a ticket, as they call it there, for jaywalking. You know, no one presumes you have the right to drive on the left hand side of the road in the States. These are laws, so. But why they have this obsession with this right? I mean, I can understand somebody out in the wilds having a hunting rifle who goes out, you know, to protect themselves from bears or whatever. But you don't need it in cities. You don't need it in towns. Farmers here have shotguns. They'll go out and do a bit of rough shooting or whatever, but they don't bring them into town with them.
Okay, I want to bring in... Thank you for that, Tommy.
Thank you, Tommy.
Colm, good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Katie. How are you? Yeah, I was just listening to your show there. Disappointment and horror, and it's an appalling thing, you know. I'm a primary school teacher myself, so I can't even begin to imagine what that must have been like. I can't even go there. As you said yourself, it's hard to go there in your head.
My point was
that I emailed, like that weapon that this kid bought, he bought two of them for some reason, the AR-15, that's an automatic... military-grade rifle. That's designed to kill people. That's all that is designed for. It's not designed for hunting animals or for, you know, protecting your home. It's designed to kill people and as many people as possible in as short a time as possible. That's what it's designed to do. And the fact that you can go in and buy this in Walmart is beyond any kind of belief. And I think as well, the American gun laws were written in 1776 as the state was being founded. After the Declaration of Independence. So the guns that they had then would have been muzzle-loading muskets, which would take about a minute, maybe two, to load if you were very, very skillful, and would fire one ball, maybe 100 metres, tops.
Yeah, they were never...
The laws still apply to the high-tech weapons of mass destruction that you can now buy in your local supermarket. So it is insane, and... I've been to the States a few times over the last number of years on vacation, on holidays, and, you know, you go to New York and, like, there's a squad car parked on every corner with four armed policemen, you know, there. And while it's quite reassuring, it's also quite disturbing in another area that they need to have this there. And that's because there's a mass availability of weapons of mass murder. It's insane.
I know, and we're having a debate on this program this week about whether or not Gardaí should be given tasers. And
That's a whole different area.
But we're in a, I mean, we're just so far away from that culture. And honestly, on a day like today, you're so grateful to be so far away from that.
Yeah, we thank God for that. I mean, but like, don't forget the arms industry is so big. Like, Germany exports 90 billion euro worth of arms every year. That's Germany.
€90 billion
That was in the Examiner this morning, I think. I have no idea what the scale of money involved in the States as regards the arms industry is. But I lived in Kuwait years ago. I was there for the second Iraq war. And I remember watching these aircraft going over on their way to Baghdad, loaded, you know, wings drooping with the bombs and the rockets and the weaponry. And I was thinking, the amount of money and technology and genius invested in these machines to kill people, as it says so much about us. You know, we've evolved into what?
Yeah, killing machines, apparently.
Exactly. It's massive and it's growing.
Yeah. Colm, many thanks for that. Many thanks for that. I have to take another break.
Joe Duffy! Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And I want to bring in Dermot now. Dermot Barrett, good afternoon to you.
Hi. Hi. The one question I'd like to ask people, everybody, is, have they ever heard of a guy called Andreas Behring Breivik? He shot 97 children up in Sweden, maybe 10 years ago. And I remember his name, but to my shame, I couldn't name one of the children he shot. So these people who do these dastardly deeds should be wiped from history. They're irrelevant to every decent person on earth. They only appeal to their own little clique that are disturbed or twisted and who have intent in doing something similar. And I don't want to know who this person was. I don't want to see his face. I just wish he didn't exist. And by just wiping him from history, he ceases to exist. And they don't deserve any of the coverage they get. It's disgraceful. It's voyeuristic. It's car crash media. Like everyone wants to see these horrific events, and they appeal to these people with the minds like that.
Well, Dermot, we made an editorial decision today that we wouldn't name the shooter in this case today. And I know that people will remember another horrific mass shooting in Christchurch in New Zealand a few years ago. Jacinta Ardern at that point refused to name the shooter in that, and obviously as well in New Zealand they introduced gun control laws immediately in the wake of that. But she took a very strong view. Exactly the point you were making, I think, Dermot, is that we cannot give a platform to people who do these things, and the media should not be,
But the media reflect the requirement of the people who listen to it, unfortunately, and you know, it's gone very strange where freedoms are after running amok. You know, like the respect has gone. It's all about freedom now and no respect. And it's very unfortunate. And I don't know how to change things back. But, you know, we have to take stock of the role of the media. If you just look up what's on television, murder, mystery, murder, death, you know, killers. It seems to be what we're being fed. Again, it reflects what people want, I suppose. But, you know, when you sit back, you say, geez, like, is it little wonder things go wrong?
Do you think it would make a difference, though, if there was a decision taken not to name these people?
Oh, I think it would make a difference to a tiny percentage of the population. 90% or 95% of the laws apply to 5% of the people. Most people are decent, hardworking people throughout the world. I worked in America, I worked in England, I travelled extensively. People are decent everywhere you go. There's a tiny percentage of them who aren't. And 95% of the laws apply to those people. So, you know, like, keep things in perspective. That's the target. It is a tiny number of people, but the damage they do is horrific. So, you know, I think that we need to look at it slightly differently, approach it from a different angle and see, can we change this in some way?
Okay, okay.
All the laws aren't going to change it. You know, I don't have the answer. I have a lot of questions, but I just can't get the answer to it.
Okay, okay, Dermot, we'll put it out there, see what people think about that. Should we have a move not to name shooters or people who perpetrate horrific crimes like this? Let us know what you think about that. 51551. Kevin Doyle, good afternoon.
Good afternoon. How are you doing?
Yeah, Kevin, you're living in Connecticut, but you're not from Connecticut.
Yeah. No, I'm not. I'm from just outside Tralee there in Kerry.
All right. Okay, so have you been out there long?
We've been in Connecticut nearly 2 years there. We moved up to, from outside New York during the pandemic to buy a house.
And
we put our daughter in school here.
What age is your daughter, Kevin?
My daughter Evelyn is 5.5 years old. She's coming out to the end of the year, kindergarten, her first year. And basically saw that last night. Apart from my first instinct of just head in hands, here we go again. My next thought was, well, keeping her home from school today, and we'll go from there.
Yeah, I mean, I honestly think anybody in the US putting their children out to school today will have had a dread in their stomach. But I mean,
I have a dread in my stomach every morning I drop her off, to be fair, because again, we are from where we are back home. And I don't know, the American psyche, I'm just speaking from what I've seen, I think they're able to offer all the thoughts and prayers and ideas, and then they're able to switch off and go on business as usual. And I just keep thinking about, like, think about that Buffalo one still there last week, and now that's last week's news, now this one, and then God forbid something next week. You know, it's just carry on. And the politics and the governments and the talk and the ideas and that last gentleman talking about the idea. Yeah, it's all good to bring the ideas to the table, but it's the sorry state of affairs that I think just won't change.
Would it make you rethink living there, Kevin?
I rethink living here every day. Since we've been here, like, yeah, it's just, you know, I think Irish people growing up, like, you know, I was born in 1980, so you go up to the 80s, 90s, you kind of, America was revered back then. You kind of go on the J1 and you think, oh, an exciting place to live and all this. I think those days are well gone. If I could move out of here tomorrow with the family, now I would. And not just because of this, but just a lot of this, you know, all the feeling in America and the division and the, you can't talk to somebody around here without, you know, falling into politics within the first minute. So I just keep myself to myself. I listen to people, but I don't try and engage because I still see myself as an outsider, you know.
Yeah, and Kevin, stay there. I've got Kieran on another line who I think is having similar thoughts today. Kieran, good afternoon.
Hi, Katie. How are you? Hi, Kevin. How are things?
How are you, Kieran?
Kieran, you're in New York.
I'm actually in New Jersey.
Oh, New Jersey, yeah.
In Manhattan. Yeah, but, you know, I'm working from home now. But, yeah, it was frightening just what happened yesterday and shocking. You know, I listen to the show every morning, and I was interested to see kind of what the perspective would be from the Irish point of view on the news. Obviously, it's all over the place here, but, you know, I have a 5-year-old and a 7-year-old. And, you know, dropping my 7-year-old off to school this morning, you know, the one thing she said to me, she's like, Daddy, they'll probably have a, it's almost like a drill today because of what happened yesterday. Yeah. So, like, they're fully exposed to it with, and you know, TV and all this.
Yeah, I was going to say, so your 7-year-old knows what happened.
Oh, she knows what happened because, you know, the TV was on. She came in and it was right across the screen. You know, it was at the time. I think it was like 14 children were shot. And it was two adults. Then this morning it went up again. But she didn't see it this morning. But it was in her head already that she was going to go into school today and do a drill. Also, there was a presence outside the school of two cop cars. Usually there's only one just for traffic, but there was two cop cars there and the cops were standing around.
But, so, you know, I'm thinking kids doing a drill today will feel different than kids doing a drill yesterday because all of this will be so in their minds.
100%, 100%. Yeah, it's just, it's scary. Like, I came home and my wife, she just said to me, she knows, get off okay. And I said, yeah, sure, they're fine. Sure, it'll never happen in our area. But I'm sure, you know, people say that in Sandy Hook and they said it in Buffalo and they said it in Texas. It'll never happen in our area. And you go through that feeling of like, when's it going to happen?
Sorry, I didn't get there, Karen, but that's the problem, isn't it? It's the feeling of the mass of this country, so statistically it'll never happen. But then the people in Texas now reeling for the rest of, you know, that's part of their history now forever going forward. I live here about 30 minutes from Sandy Hook, and we got an email from our superintendent last night to all parents talking, you know, about their psychological health for the kids on land here at school, and they can talk to anyone they want, and we've got all the security and we've got all the cops. They have them there every day. But that still did not deter this 18-year-old lad at that school in Texas, because they had the same type of setup, security guards, you know, police officers, all this. So they can't deter a fellow like that with a will to kill. You know, this whole idea of it never happened. I mean, that's why my wife's in California, but we're just reconsidering everything now because it's too uneasy.
And Kieran, can I ask you the same thing that I asked Kevin? Would you consider moving back to Ireland from?
Probably not. I mean, we've really established a network of friends over here. Our kids have friends over here. I'm established in my job. My wife is established in her job. So for us, this is home. I'm probably in this country longer than I've been in Ireland. But I do consider Ireland to be my home, ultimately. But I think, you know, for us to move back now, it really would be starting all over again. And I just don't think it'd be fair on the kids either, just to kind of just pick them up and get out of here. You know, we just have to watch them and just be careful where we're going with them and make sure that they're safe as much as we can. But, you know, it's...
Would you have friends? You say you have a big network of friends there. Would any of them be on the other side of this gun control debate?
I mean, I was telling your research earlier on that, you know, I have friends who are in the police department in New York. There is a fear... And I think, I don't know if it was Kevin mentioning this, but there's a fear that, you know, they do pull out their gun, and if something happens and if the wrong person is shot, it's all on camera. Everybody has smartphones now. Everyone's taping everything. And, you know, some of these police officers could be 2 or 3 years away from their pension, from retiring. And all of a sudden, they make the wrong shot and it's gone. So, you know, they're risking a lot as well, not to minimize, obviously, what happened yesterday, because I think, you know, the police, if they were there and doing everything they could, they would have and did in some cases. But I just think, you know, it's turned into a very kind of very dodgy country.
Yeah. Kieran, unfortunate note, I'm going to have to take my final break. Many thanks for that, Kieran, and Kevin will take that break now. Joe
Duffy. Talk to Joe on 0818 715 815.
And that's it for today. Elaine Conlon was our BCO. Tommy O'Sullivan was on sound. Sean O'Gorman produced. Stand by for Ray.
0818 715 815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.